This audio presentation is brought to you by thepokercamp.com, educating poker enthusiasts through online videos featuring Chris Fox Wallace, poker author, instructor, and professional player.
And now here's Chris making some key points about single table sit-and-go tournaments.
Let's go to stack size manipulation. And this stuff is something that takes a little practice and a little paying attention, but it makes the game a lot more interesting, and it makes it easier to pay attention when you understand all the stack size manipulation, how to mess with your opponent's stack sizes and your own, and where stack sizes are important. When it comes to stack size, early in a sit-and-go, this is something that's surprising to a lot of people, how you play is not as important as it is late in a sit-and-go. Early in a sit-and-go, there's a lot more still to be determined. A lot more bad luck can befall you by the end of the sit-and-go. A lot more good luck you can stumble upon. And so playing early in a sit-and-go is something I focus on less in these seminars, and it's also easier to do very well. So I'm going to get that out of the way real quick before the stack size manipulation. All you really need to know about early in a sit-and-go is during the first round, I play some hands. I don't play a lot of hands. I generally only play hands in late position, late and middle position, if I think I can get away with the middle position. I don't want to call and get raised off my hand, so I tend to play in later position where there are less people who are likely to raise. In early position, I tend to limp re-raise a lot with aces and kings, because if you raise and take down the blinds, it doesn't do you a lot of good. The blinds are so small. So the limp re-raise in early position is a very good play with aces or kings. With ace-king suited, it's not a bad play either, depending on how wild the players are. If you've got pretty wild players, or if it's the first hand of a sit-and-go, limp re-raising with ace-king suited may not be a bad play. It's a particularly good play with aces or kings. And that's not because it works so often, but because it's not a big deal if it fails. Because if it fails and everybody calls along with you and you have to throw your hand away, you didn't lose much equity because you weren't going to win much with aces or kings. If nobody raised pre-flop, nobody had a big hand, nobody was probably going to call you, and all you were going to do is take down the blinds anyway. And the blinds just aren't worth anything. When your stack goes from 2,000 to 2,060, your equity doesn't go up hardly at all. It doesn't do you much good. So the limp re-raise and taking that risk and trying to win a big pot is worthwhile. The later positions, I tend to play a few hands during that first round, but only during the first round. Because the blinds are very small compared to your stack, your implied odds are better, and because all the bad players are still in the tournament. And that dead money that's going somewhere give yourself a chance to take that dead money by flopping a big hand. During the second and third rounds, I tighten up, and during the second round is probably when I play the tightest. And that's just based on solid tournament theory. The bad players are more likely to be gone. Your implied odds are lower because the blinds are a little higher. But the blinds aren't high enough to hurt you at all yet. Your M is still very high, and you're not really worried about playing hands yet or being knocked out yet. So there's not a lot of reason to play hands during that second level, which at the party structure would be the 30-60 level. And once you get to the 50-100 level, there tends to be a little more reason to steal in the third level, but I still play quite tight depending on how my opponents are playing. And then during the fourth level is when you're going to open it up quite a bit, start stealing more. And then during the fifth level, things change, and it's all about stack size and where you are in relation to your opponents. That's the basic, all you need to know for the early rounds, and then it's solid poker from there, just being smart about what you're doing. Stack size becomes very important once you get down to five players or so, and once you get down to the 100, 200 blind level or higher. The first thing to look at is, are you headed toward the money? Are you likely to make the money from where you are? And if you've got, you know, the second biggest stack and the third biggest stack is pretty far below you and the fourth biggest stack is pretty far below him, you don't need to play a lot of hands. There's not a lot of reason for it. When there's five people left and you're very likely to make the money, you know, you do want to play your big hands. You do want to steal when necessary and play hands with the very short stacks who can't really hurt your stack. But there's not a lot of reason to play hands. Now, if you're the fourth biggest stack and you're only slightly behind the third guy, now you're in a position where you want to put pressure on the guys who you can hurt, and you want to play hands when you have to, because you don't want to be blinded away and end up in trouble. You know that the third and probably second place guys are going to play very tight, and so you want to steal from those guys. If you got someone with a giant stack who's been playing a lot of hands, you don't want to push around a guy like that without until you're in the money. It seems like common sense stuff, but it's all stuff you have to consider constantly. Watch every hand, how the blinds change, where the blinds are coming, who they're hitting, what kind of pressure they're putting on people. If you take some example situations, the blinds are at 200, 400, you've got 1,500 in chips, and everybody else is in a reasonable chip position, there's nothing strange happening, you're going to want to be stealing like crazy, because you're not likely to make the money from where you are. If you've got 4,000 in chips and the blinds are 200, 400, then stealing is still more valuable than a lot of people realize. But you don't want to be stealing if you're in second place and the third place stack is at 2,400 and the fourth place stack is at 2,200. Those guys are not likely to catch you just from the blinds. So you don't want to be stealing a lot. And when you are stealing, you want to be stealing from those third and fourth place guys, and you don't want to be getting in a fight with either the fifth place guy who's a very short stack who's going to be happy to get all his chips in, or the first place stack who can break you. You want to steal from the guys who are not going to want to get in fights. And when you got a guy who's in third or a guy who's in fourth who's close to third, those guys don't want to take a lot of risks most of the time, so you're going to want to be stealing from them. If you've seen throughout the course of the tournament that one of those guys doesn't mind taking risks, then you don't want to steal from them. But most of the time, guys who end up with a chip stack that size in that situation are risk-averse players. They don't like to take risks, and they don't want to fight. Particularly if you've seen high shark scope numbers on them, if you're seeing good poker tracker numbers on them, if you've seen solid play from them throughout most of the tournament, those, you know, the third place guy is not going to call an all-in push from you where you put all his chips in unless he's got aces, kings, maybe queens, and ace king. He's not going to call you without a big hand because he doesn't want to be knocked out before the money, and he's going to try to coast into the money. So stealing from the right players at the right time is really important. And then you get into second level stack manipulation where you have to think ahead about what your raise is going to mean, who you're going to call a re-raise from, how much it's going to be, where it's going to leave your stack, and considering those things at all times. If you have 4,000 in chips, the small blind has 4,000 in chips, and you're on the button, and the big blind only has 800, the blinds are 200, 400, the big blind has half his stack in there. If you look down at a pair of fives and you raise, you have to raise a reasonable amount that will chase out the small blind. The big blind will probably call you, but that's okay. You've got an extra 200 in chips from the small blind in there. The big blind isn't going to hurt your stack terribly. You're going to be at 3,200. And you're going to be in a race or ahead slightly the vast majority of the time against the big blind. So if you're in a race or slightly ahead, and you got an extra 200 in chips in there, and there's the possibility even that he'll fold his hand, although there's no hand he should fold, some players will, then you definitely want to raise, but you don't want to risk a lot of chips in case the small blind decides to come over the top and the small blind is sitting there at 4,000 and can break you. So you make a minimum raise to 800. That puts the big blind all in. It tells the small blind to get out of the way, and he certainly doesn't want to mess with you unless he's got a big hand. If he's got a big hand, he's going to mess with you no matter what you raise. So you make the smallest raise, to 800. He doesn't want to call to 600 unless he's got a big hand, in which case he's going to raise and chase you off, and you want to risk the least amount that you can. So you raise to 800, and if the small blind raises, you throw your hand away. It's very easy. There's no question about it. You let your hand go. He's announced that he's got a big hand. He's not going to mess with you, since you can knock him out of the tournament the same way he can knock you out, unless he does have a big hand. You've already raised. You've already raised when you know you're going to be called by the big blind. You've given him every indication that you have a hand, and if he re-raises, he has guaranteed you that he's got a hand. So you throw your hand away. If you raise to 1,200, there's no difference, except that you lose an extra 400 in chips. If you raise to 1,600, you just lose an extra 800 in chips when the small blind decides to raise. If the small blind folds, then there's no difference in the two raises at all. So you're just looking at how one raise will hurt you and the other raise won't. And so the smaller raise is the way to go there. You raise to 800 and then the big blind probably calls and you get the race that you were looking for, or you end up being ahead. And if you instead had 1,500 in chips, then you'd want to push all in there when the small blind has 4,000, because you want to put enough chips in there to chase him out And if you raise to 800 with your fives and he re-raises, you can't fold. You're getting 3-1 from the pot, and you're likely to be in a race against an ace-king or an ace-queen, or even an ace-jack. You haven't shown much strength with your 800 raise. If you've only got 1,500 in chips, you don't have a lot behind you to scare him. He's likely to put you all in. But if you put your 1,500 in, that's going to hurt him if he calls and loses. He knows that he has no fold equity, so you make different plays according to the different stack sizes that you've got and according to what your opponent's got. If you're instead looking at 6-7 suited, there's no reason to steal here because the big blind is going to call you and he's likely to be ahead of you. And so with 6-7 suited, in most cases you just throw your hand away and hopefully the small blind decides to fight with the guy. Or he gives up his 200 in chips and you have a 4,000 to 3,800 lead over him. And so the stack size manipulation and then the hand that you're looking at and your opponent's stacks, all those things all work together. And with enough work with these various tools, you'll understand how those things work together and been able to really manipulate most of the table. Now, when you run into a complete maniac who's happened to get lucky and amass a bunch of chips, you can't do that. But with the rest of the time, and the vast majority of the time in sit-and-goes and in late-game situations, you can really manipulate the whole table.
Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by thepokercamp.com. Please visit our video section where you'll find instructional videos by Chris Fox Wallace and other poker professionals.